Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Attention, collectors of vinyl. Have you ever gone into a record store and felt overwhelmed by all the unfamiliar options? Are you frustrated by the constantly increasing prices of classic rock staples? Do you avoid streaming music or long for the days when music was recommended to you by a friend instead of an algorithm? If the answer to any of these questions is yes, then check out I'd Buy That for a Dollar, a podcast about inexpensive, common, and underappreciated records that are waiting to be rediscovered. Each week, hosts Sean, Jeremy, and Peter discuss an album and the artist's history. Previous episodes include selections by The Isley Brothers, The Carpenters, The Doobie Brothers, and Donna Summer, among others. Become a bargain bin pro and impress all your friends with cool music trivia. Listen to I'd Buy That for a Dollar wherever you get your podcasts. Please consider supporting Black Women United YEG for the protection and advancement of Black women and girls in Alberta. You can learn more about them at bwunited.ca. They are always looking for donations and volunteers. So please, again, support Black Women United YEG for the protection and advancement of Black women and girls in Alberta. Again, that website is bwunited.ca.
Hey, this is Trevor from Halifax calling in to say that I support Creative Control on Patreon because I think long-form arts journalism is a crucial part of music culture and there's simply not enough of it out there today. Vish is a master interviewer, he lands great guests, and he has his finger on the pulse of the ever-changing music landscape both here in Canada and abroad. For all of these reasons and many more, I think you should support Creative Control on Patreon too.
To make your flexible monthly donation to Creative Control, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol today. I'm Visha's wife, and I will love him no matter what you do, and now he has me on the record saying that.
Witch Prophet is the performing name of musician, producer, and label co-owner A.O. Lalani, who is currently based in Caledon, Ontario. Originally from Toronto, Witch Prophet last appeared on this show with her partner, DJ Sun to discuss their 2018 album, The Golden Octave. This year, Witch Prophet released its follow-up entitled DNA Activation. This record was shortlisted for Canada's prestigious and annual Polaris Music Prize, which will name its album of the year on October 19th, 2020. Leilani and I connected for a conversation about pandemic life in Toronto and Caledon, working with session musicians for the first time, themes of family, Black resilience, and Black resistance on DNA Activation, Canada's arts grants situation, her label, Heartlake Records, future plans, and more. A part of the Entertainment One Network with the support of listeners like you who follow and subscribe to this podcast and spread the word about it and make flexible monthly donations at patreon.com/creativecontrol and Massey Hall's concert film series live at masseyhall.com where you can stream dozens of 30-minute films for free, including performances by past podcast guests like Zaki Ibrahim. Plus, in-kind support from Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, Ontario, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario. This is the 573rd episode of Creative Control, featuring the talented and wise Witch Prophet, with your host, me, Vish Khanna.
We know she bow down to the queen. I'm the keeper of history. You niggas can't fuck with me, no.
Hi, Leilani, how are you?
Good, how are you doing?
I'm well. First of all, where in the world are you today?
Right now, I am actually in Toronto.
Wait a minute. Hang on a second. I thought you moved. I thought since we last spoke many years ago, we both moved to different places. Didn't you move from Toronto?
Yeah, I did. I don't live here. I live in Caledon.
Caledon.
Yeah, right. But it's just about a 45-minute drive, you know. An hour with traffic, so, yeah. Sometimes when I miss the city, I come here.
Do you miss the city?
Sometimes, yeah.
Because, like...
Not all the time. It's rare.
Yeah, because I remember when you moved... So, for those who don't know, and maybe you can correct me, but Caledon is kind of like a... more of a rural outpost about an hour from Toronto.
Oh, yeah, for sure. It's total farmland.
Right. So, but that's not where you're from. You're not from Caledon. You're not... Are you from... No. Where are you from originally?
No.
We talked about this before.
Yeah, grew up in Toronto.
Right.
So I would say I'm a probably the neighborhood I rep the most would be St. Clair West. So
Okay. Yeah. So you're a Toronto person. What drives someone like you to move to rural Caledon? I'm just curious. What was it?
Rent and just wanting to actually to get out of the city, to be away from all the noise. And to have the choice when I wanted to be in the space or not, whereas when we were living in the city, it was like there's no escape. You know, you're always here. The city has sort of like a buzz, a hum that is that you really notice only when you're outside of it. When you're in it, you don't.
Yeah, I always like to say I never lived in Toronto, but I felt like I was there a lot, and I worked there for many years as well. So I was going in frequently, but I always think of it as a nice place to visit, but I couldn't imagine living there. And that's kind of where you're at as well.
Yeah, I mean, like, if I could afford to buy a house here, I'd definitely do it. But I'd still have a place outside of the city, because just living outside has really made me recognize how important being within nature is and having silence. And even just the fact that it's like there's no lights on our street. So as soon as the sun sets, that's it. It's dark. You can't see anything. And at first it was really scary, but then it's sort of like when you're sleeping, if you have like a lamp on in your room or something, when you're trying to sleep, you're not going to get the best sleep. You're not going to be and have the best rest. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
In this space, it's like there's no light, there's no sound. It's just like this wonderful nature where you're just like, oh my God, I'm so relaxed and so I feel so good. But at the same time, I grew up in the city, so I miss seeing people on a regular basis. And I mean, obviously, due to coronavirus, it's a lot more limited now, but it's still something that I crave, but not to the extent of being immersed in it 24/7.
Yeah, like going back to your analogy, like the whole city of Toronto is basically a giant lamp, isn't it? Always on.
Yeah.
Always keeping you awake.
Definitely.
Yeah, it's kind of rough. I'm with you on that. Interestingly, you chose to live in relative isolation from all that noise, all of those people, just at a point in history. You live there with your partner, Sun Sun, who I adore as well. You and Sun Sun were on the show together. How is Sun Sun, first of all?
Oh, she's fantastic.
Good. Wish her well for me, if you don't mind. And you live in Caledon with Sun Sun, and we'll get to what you've done with the place, because I used to send tweets out about the place that you had. You were fixing it up. You were doing all this stuff. It sounded really cool. So I want to ask you more about that. But I want to go back to where I started from, which was, yeah, you weirdly anticipated Like, do you view it this way? Like, by moving to Caledon, you kind of chose a form of isolation from, you know, the bustling city. And now lots of us have to make, involuntarily, we have to make that decision, so to speak. Like, we have to choose to kind of be on our own and away from people. Do you see the irony there, or the kismet?
Yeah, for sure. 100%. Like, we always talk about it. Like, actually, when all of this started and everybody was like, oh my God, what are we going to do? It's so hard to be isolated, to be away from everybody. And I was like, oh my, we kind of got like a year and a half head start with this. We were doing this. And not only were we isolated, but we didn't have any electricity or any plumbing, or, you know, we were really roughing it out there for a minute.
So, wow.
It's really interesting to see it. And we're so incredibly privileged and grateful to even have this opportunity to do that, because I know so many people who would love to be able to be in the position that we are in, because it is a privilege to be in a space like in nature and
So that first year and a half, like you say, like a lot of people when this first started had the kind of shock of having no choice in the matter. Can you relate to the feelings you were seeing expressed based on your own experience from when you first moved to Caledon in this, it sounds like some kind of shack with no amenities at all. You describe it as barely even a structure.
You think so, wouldn't you?
That's what you said. There's no plumbing, there's no electricity.
There wasn't any. It's a beautiful house. It was a old farmhouse that had been abandoned for about 20 years. So of course, like, the roof needed to be done. We needed to gut the entire thing. All the plumbing and electricity was too old to use. Hmm. So there was a time when we were, after we gutted it, that we were, you know, had a mattress on the floor and living in the open space and being like, you know, barbecuing outside and be like, we could do this. It'll be fine. We can learn how to drywall. And we did. We really did. And now, you know, it's a fantastic house, but it really is. It really makes me be like, wow, I am so grateful, because I know what it was like before. I post those things to let people know as well. Like, hey, I know you might see images of us. It might look like we're living it up, but please go back a few years and look and see what we started with and how much work we put into this and time and energy and sweat, like our own sweat. Into the walls, there's actually, yeah.
That's remarkable. That's great. So you did most of the reno on your own.
Yeah, we did almost everything except for the electricity, plumbing, and the roof.
Right.
Because that obviously has to be done by professionals. But everything else was myself and Sun and a couple friends here and there coming in and helping.
Do you have any carpentry background or anything like that, or did you just...
No, I still don't know how to hold a drill. It's actually all Sun. I'm mostly the person... Okay, no, let's start again. It was mostly Sun who did almost everything, whereas I was there to, you know, I put in all the insulation. I helped, you know, hold the drywall when she needed to, like, drill it into the wall and things like that. And I was the get person. Whatever she needed, I was there for her. So
right, but being
we worked well as a team. Right. But she was the leader for sure.
And being immersed in that experience, though, I assume it gave you a real window. No pun intended. I hope you didn't have to install any windows, but I hope it gave you.
We did.
Some. You did have to. You had to put in some windows.
Yeah.
Did Sun do that?
Yeah, she framed out the entire thing and did it.
Wow. Okay, because all I was getting at is once you start, I think there's a lot of intimidation when you contemplate, like when a normal mortal person with no background in the stuff, they think, oh, I don't think I can do that. We better get a professional. I mean, my wife and I and my family, we moved into a place that was only 10 years old, and we knew there were some things it needed, but we didn't know the full extent of the damage until the people came and took more stuff apart. They're like, no, this is way worse than we thought. And then So your mind goes like, wait a minute, like these were professional people, supposedly, and they screwed this up. That means anyone can screw this up. I mean, we all have it. Like the doctor tells you the wrong thing, or the mechanic tells you the wrong thing about your car. And you're like, what was the point? I went to this human being, valuable, you know, human being. They get things wrong. All of us do. But I trust that they knew what they were talking about, and then they didn't. And then that puts you in this kind of self-reliant mode. Well, you know what? Forget it. Forget calling anyone. I'll go on YouTube or whatever and figure this out myself. Do you have this awakening within you to be like, you know what? Any problem within reason, I can try and take a crack at it first. Do you have that now?
100%. And it definitely started with contractors being like, you need help. It'll cost $70,000. And we were like, get out of our house. Like, it literally was just like, we cannot afford that. Like, you're crazy. We can do it ourselves. So a lot of that literally is where it started, of like, whatever I can learn on YouTube, which really actually is a great learning tool. Like,
absolutely. Yeah.
There's a lot of people there who are like, hey, do it yourself. You can do it. There are a lot of things where, like, you know, we've made a couple mistakes here and there. And of course, if we were, you know, if this was our trade, it probably wouldn't have been the mistakes, easy mistakes that we made, but it's not. But at the same time, I'm so happy with the house that we have. Like, and I like seeing it and being like, I did this, or Sun made this, or like, we built this up. And so it really has given me the chance to be like, I can do anything if I really want to, and I truly believe in it, and I have the passion. Just like anybody else, you're going to be able to succeed. It really doesn't matter if you don't have the tools or the know-how. You can get it, right? So
yeah, it is weird. Like, you mentioned that $70,000 figure, and I just had this experience where I got the estimate. I got a bill for something, and the bill was like $5,000, but when they broke it down, the materials were like $300. And you're like, wait a second, what? Like, so when you say $70,000, like the material, like to, for Sun and you to be like, you know what? Screw this. Like, we'll go buy the materials and we'll figure it out. And I'm sure you made mistakes along the way, but I have hired professional people who've made mistakes along the way and had to go back to get more stuff. So we're all human beings, is I guess where I'm coming from. And maybe this level of expertise thing has been blown out of proportion. We can all kind of do stuff if we really try.
Yes, we can all kind of do stuff if we really try. There's definitely people who are experts in the thing, in the trades that they do, in anything, but it's really far and few between. There's a lot of people who are just, you know, have a little bit more knowledge than you, but if you had the same knowledge, you'd know how to do the thing. So
yeah. Well, does this relate in any way to your approach to music making? I mean, the last time you and Sun were on, we kind of talked about how Sun tends to make the beats, and you tend to write the song, so to speak, in terms of the lyrics and coming up with the vocals. Mm-hmm. New record is fantastic. It's called DNA Activation. Was that model of creativity kind of followed again? Is that how you two work together?
Well, actually, with this album, I also had a hand in production. So a lot of it was me and Sun sitting together, and Sun going through all the sound banks that she has, and me pointing out to the ones that I really liked, and then telling her, you know, like, I want a saxophone, I want a trumpet, I want, you know, this tempo, and her sort of creating a sound that I liked, and then also me reaching out to Karen and to Brandon to join us on a few tracks. So I was a bit more hands-on in terms of like the creation part, but I think, as always, we work really well as a team, and I'm still not the one making the beats. it's Sun. It was like Sun beats always and forever.
Yeah.
But I'm definitely there and sharing with her the inspiration of what I want to share with everybody else with my songs and stuff like that. So we definitely researched different Ethiopian jazz albums and a lot of Eritrean music, and then R&B and hip-hop beats that I really liked, and different producers that I liked, and then she sort of worked with that knowledge to create the beats, and then of course I wrote the lyrics.
Well, yeah, it is wonderful. Can you mentioned a couple of external collaborators? Who was that again? I missed that.
Mm-hmm. That's Karen Ng on saxophone, and Brandon Valdivia Masaya on flute. He plays flute on my song Itmet, and Karen plays saxophone on Elsabet, Tesfai, and another track, but I can't remember. I think she plays it on three tracks, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, Karen and Brandon are people I know rather well, and they're very, very talented, so that's cool. I'm glad you got that.
Oh,
my
yeah.
family and I have been listening to DNA Activation a lot, and my wife today commented on, she's like, it's basically like a jazz record. And I was like, yes, it does feel a lot like a jazz record. You'd mentioned a sound bank of horns and, you know, trumpets and saxophones and things like that, but you also mentioned Karen and Brandon. So it is some mixture of sort of sampled sounds and live sounds, and I assume you may have even manipulated some of the live stuff you got to seem a little like a...
Like a sample. Yeah, the... Karen's trumpet playing, or sorry, Karen's saxophone playing in the song Tesfai seems like she's just, you know, fluidly playing throughout the track. But that was actually, I think it's about 6 or 7 different chopped up samples of her playing that we mixed up and put in different in different order. And came up with that, and we're like, the fact that Karen, no matter what she plays, no matter what you chop up or put before, like, you know, put one note before the other, it really doesn't matter, because she's just so incredibly talented that it all worked out really well. So Tesfai is live saxophone by Karen, but it incorporates sampling, because we chopped up her saxophone and rearranged it. Whereas Elsabet is Karen freestyling on the beat.
Okay, interesting.
She just came through and was like, "I'm gonna freestyle." Like, she was like, "What do you want me to do?" And I was like, "Freestyle, do whatever you like." And she was like, "Okay," and then did that, and we're like, "My God, you're amazing."
So Elsabet is her playing straight through, and you didn't really mess with that. I'm curious about Tesfai, though. Like, why? Often when you get someone to come in and do an overdub, you give them notes, you give them ideas. Sometimes if you know enough, you can give them a chart even. But what was the motivation? That's interesting. You had one instance where you're like, play through, do what you want to do. The next one you thought about moving things around. Why on Tesfai did you think it warranted not letting her kind of play through and instead taking what, you know, taking things she'd done and moving them around and sampling them, chopping them up a little bit? What was the distinction there?
Yeah, so the difference was that when we had invited her over to lay down her sax, she came through for like an hour and a half and then had to get back to the city. And so she came through, recorded what she could for Elsabet, and then was like, "I'm just going to record a whole bunch of riffs, and then you guys do whatever you want." So it was just, here's a whole bunch of riffs you can use whenever you need. Mm. And then we had already, Elsabet was the first single we released, so that was what we were focusing on. We didn't even have any of the other tracks, really, at the time that Karen came through.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, like, we had the base, like, the thoughts of what things were going to be, but I still was like, and we had a couple beats, but I was like, it just didn't feel right. And then Karen came through and laid down the sax for Elsabet, and then left, and then recorded a bunch of, recorded a bunch of stuff of her playing, and then was like, do what you want to do, and then left, and I was like, she just gave us, like, so much gold, this is crazy. And then at that point I was like, okay, let's chop it up and see what we have to work with. Yeah. And then, yeah,
it's kind of like a timeline thing. It was just where you were at in the making of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And I've never worked with a live musician before. Right. So I'm not, I don't really know what to say other than, you know, vibe. Like, I trust that you know how to play your instrument, so just do it. You know, like, I kind of gave her examples of, like, you know, this is where we're leaning towards, you know. So I told her Ethio jazz and soul and hip hop. So she knew what we were going with, but it was really just like, you do you, because this is the first time I've really reached out to people outside of, you know, computer sounds. So
yeah, cool. You've been brought in to work on other people's stuff in some capacities. Yes.
Yeah.
So as a vocalist primarily.
Yeah, mostly as a vocalist.
So did that experience and the kind of parameters or lack of parameters that you were given inform how you worked with Karen and Brandon to say, look, I know you know what to do with your instrument. That's why I've asked you here, but I don't feel like it's my place to tell you exactly what to do. Was that born of some experience you've had with working with others?
That's all the experience I've ever had of just like, okay, come through and go ahead. I actually would prefer direction. I myself would prefer direction in those instances. It's a little less stressful, just in terms of like, yeah. But it's mostly when I'm writing on other people's songs, it's mostly about the vibe of the song and tapping into myself. But I do like a bit of direction, but I kind of also feel like, when it's other people's songs. So like with Karen, I was like, Ethio jazz is the direction, but that's about it. You know, like, do your thing with that in mind.
Is that artistic respect?
Direction. Pardon?
Yeah. Is that artistic respect? I've done this with like graphic designers and people where I'm like, I need a poster made, and they say, well, what do you want it to be? I'm like, you know what? Here's the text. Here's the information, but I don't feel comfortable dictating what the image should be, because that's why I've asked you to do it. I can't do that myself. That's why I feel like, and you know, you go back and forth sometimes. If someone does something that you really have a problem with, you say, ah, that's good, but can we try this or do this? But otherwise, my motivation in asking someone else to do something for me in this regard, the same way I think you ask Karen Brandon, is like, I know you have talent. I know you are a visionary artist in your own right. It's not my place to tell you exactly what to do, but I know that what you do will fulfill my vision to create what I'm, you know, ultimately trying to create. Do you have that a little bit?
Oh, yeah, for sure. 100%. You have to trust the people that you're working with, because not only does it, like, you know, give that other person, like, the confidence of, like, okay, well, they must like what I'm doing to ask me to come here, but it also allows them to feel some sort of what's the word I'm looking for? Like, they invested in your project. Yeah.
No, I think it's very important, and I think sometimes it's taken for granted because I've not really ever been in a totally dictatorial situation. I may have been the dictator at various points if I think about it, but I'm like, no, please just do this. I just need you to do this, and then that's it. But like, now as I've aged and gotten older and I've worked with more people, that's where I landed. If there's things I don't know how to do or don't exactly know how to do, and it seems to work out. Like, it's like the person found it in my mind. Like, they went into my imagination and they made the thing that I was envisioning, and I didn't really say anything. And I don't know if that's a self-fulfilling prophecy or something, like we're on the same page. Like, but it does feel kind of magical when you let people take their interpretation or like you say, vibe off of what you've done, create their own thing. It makes it that much more fulfilling. Oh, you get it. You got it. You got what I was going for. Like, I think that's really fulfilling, don't you?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So we've talked a little bit about some distinctions between your work on DNA Activation and at least your last record, The Golden Octave. You talked about having more of a hand in the production with Sun Sun, and you talked about bringing external people in. How else would you distinguish this record, the new one, from the last one, per se? I mean, this one seems to have, I know on the face of it, based on the song titles alone, there seems to be some sort of concept, because from my reading, these all appear to be names. Is that right, first of all?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So can you talk about that? Like, talk, and the last record, I mean, I remember the last time we talked about time travel, you being a witch, which was fun. Fun talks. I enjoyed all of that. But this feels a little bit different on some level. This feels more like, and it comes at an interesting time where I think a lot of us in this suspension are trying to figure ourselves out, figure out where we connect or how we connect to our pasts and our families and our origins, our heritage. Is any of that swimming around on DNA activation?
Oh yeah, 100%. I mean, the difference is that this song is the album is incredibly intimate and vulnerable, and it is every song is named after both sets of grandparents, my mother, my father, my sister, my son, and myself. And so they are specific songs for specific people, but also are about biblical stories and myths that I grew up learning about. And then also I kind of branched out and sang some hooks in Tigrinya and Amharic, and, you know, dabbled in hoping that I say the correct pronunciations of things, but I'm pretty sure I did, so it's all good. Hopefully, we'll see. I don't know. Maybe I'll get an email from somebody being like, you didn't say that right. but it was my way of, you know, connecting with my ancestry and my family and really showing myself like I still am a time traveling witch, but I also am Ethiopian and Eritrean, and I also am African, and I also am, you know, all these people that are within the titles of the song. Like I am all of them, and they are me. So
when were these songs, in terms of the lyrics and the themes here, when were they written? In particular, when were they written in relation to our current suspension? When were they written in relation to both the pandemic and also our the social unrest, the police brutality, the protests that have going on, that have been going on, and also I think the higher profile and significance of Black Lives Matter. I feel like there's a lot of stuff swimming around in our collective psyches right now, and I just wonder if any of that has informed these particular songs or your work since it's really come to the fore. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, actually, these songs were written in 2019, so before at least the pandemic stuff. They were written before that, and then in terms of the theme and the idea of the album, that was really from 2014. I had this idea in 2014, but then I always say in every article, like, I wrote a grant, I didn't get the grant, I felt like a loser and put this idea on the shelf, and then, you know, was like, it's not a good idea, or at least it's not an idea that's going to get me any funding to do. And so I just put it on the shelf, and then focused on Above Top Secret, and then focused on releasing The Golden Octave. And then after all of that happened, I was like, I think I can go back to doing this album, which is the original one that I wanted to do and what I wanted to be my debut. But I think everything in its right time. So it was the right time for it to come out. It was the right time to share the stories of my family and to share the stories of Black resilience and Black power, and you know, everything worked out well. So it definitely wasn't written for that, but it worked out to be on the same vibrational level. So
yeah, for those who don't know, I believe we covered this last time as well. Above Top Secret is a kind of arts events collective that you're a part of. Is that a good way to describe it?
No.
Well, that's a group you're in.
That was 88 Days of Fortune.
Oh, sorry.
Now Heart Lake Records.
Right.
Yeah, no worries.
Sorry.
And Above Top Secret is myself, Sun, and Brandon Valdivia on drums, and it's electro grunge hip hop,
right?
experimental group.
Okay, so that was happening, and that kind of took your. I just want to circle back to something you said. Leilani, you should not feel like a loser for not getting a grant.
I know. Trust me.
That is.
Oh, I know. I know this.
Okay.
It's ridiculous. I know. But the thing is like when you put all your when you feel like, oh, this is a really great idea, and I'm going to clarify something in a bit, but when you feel like, you know, this is a really great idea, and then you write it out and you send it to a thing and you spend 4 months thinking it's going to happen, you're going to get it, and they're going to see, you know, your vision, and then you get this letter back that's like, nah. It makes you be like, maybe my idea was wrong. And to be honest, it wasn't that my idea was wrong, is that it wasn't a clear grant. And now, within that time of like getting that letter of, you know, denial of funding from 2014 until, you know, 2019, I was working with the Toronto Arts Council. I was sitting on different assessment committees for the OAC, for Canada Council, for Factor. So I got to read a lot of grants, yep. And I got to see what was getting funded and why it was getting funded and what needed to be changed with my idea and my vocabulary that I was using within the grant. And when I rewrote it, I got the grant. And so really it was like, that's why I said like everything in its due time, because, you know, I could have released it without any funding or anything, which is what I did with the Golden Octave. But I really felt like, no, I want to do this correctly, and I want to be able to bring people in and, you know, all these other aspects of having funding for a project. And so it's not that I was like, meh, never write a grant again, or even that, like, you can't do anything without a grant, because I know you can. It was just that it was a definite learning moment for me to be like, okay, it wasn't that the idea was bad, but the grant was not good. Now that I look back at it, and now that I've sat on assessment committees, I see why I wasn't given the grant. It wasn't because of my idea, you know, so.
I have sat.
Anything, you learned so many things, yeah. Sitting on those. Yeah.
Yeah. I've sat on so many of those granting bodies as a juror. I haven't sat on them. That makes me sound like a giant monster. I haven't, you know, sat on their buildings. I have actually sat in some of their juries, and it was a tremendous learning experience. I haven't applied for, on behalf of myself anyway, I've not applied for grants for myself. I've applied for grants on behalf of some of the organizations I've worked with. I wish your experience could be shared by everyone. I wish everyone who didn't get a grant... but it was like there was potential there, because that's clearly what I think they probably saw in you when they invited you to sit on all of the like you mentioned several organizations.
Yeah.
There's potential here. This person clearly has a vision. Why don't we get them to sit on a grant? Because they clearly have talent and a vision. And in a sense that, like you say, that informed your ability to write a grant, quote unquote, properly. But imagine everyone who didn't get a grant got that experience of like, here's what you need to do, and here's a sense of what people are doing to both succeed and not succeed. Wouldn't that be incredible if that was a thing?
It would be, but there's a thing called gatekeepers, and so they're very comfortable in where they're sitting. But like, for real, like it's a thing that people don't share the grants that they've written, the successful grants. That's a lie. Some people do. I have had people. Yeah. There are people who do share, mostly in the independent music scene. Mostly in the queer scene, I've had artists share their grants to show me, and vice versa. But majority of people do not share their grants, how they're writing it, how they're formatting things, and on top of that, almost everybody does not know that you can call and ask why you didn't get the grant, just for some notes.
Oh,
some,
man.
Some feedback.
That's the best. I used
so
to.
So many people don't know that.
Yeah. When I went to university.
So it's like you end up.
I always went to the teacher. I said, hey, what's going on here? I thought I did better than this. Yeah. And they would talk to me about it, and we'd come to some resolution. But no matter what, next thing I handed in, based on that little experience, I think it helped both of us. They knew where I was coming from, and I would do better. And I knew where they were coming from, so I would make improvements and adjustments. It's amazing. I think if there's just an open flow of information and conversation, I think it's great. So everyone should share their successful grant applications. I agree. That would be amazing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
We agree on that.
And then also what it does is it allows people to not fall into the trend of rewriting the same grant over and over again.
Right, exactly.
You know, it's like,
yeah,
hey,
yeah.
You've already exposed that you've written this. You cannot write the exact same thing and get the same funding. That's not really fair. You
know? There's a lot of...
Which I've seen.
Yes, there's a lot of conversation among music people, music record store owners I know, and other musicians being like, how can these same companies get these rubber stamp grants every year?
Yeah.
How is this a thing? Shouldn't there be like a limit on how many grant applications you can even... you know, submit and a limit to the ceiling of funding? Like, if you're getting 200 grand every year, shouldn't it top off maybe at 5 years? Is that unreasonable? Like, I don't know. So, there's some issues there. But I assume also, within what we're saying, I noticed in your biographical information on your website at the moment, you make a point of saying that DNA Activation was a grant-funded album. Like, that's part of the sentence, and I thought, oh, that's, I've never seen that before. No one makes a point of saying this was funded by the Ontario government, basically, or the Ontario.
Well, you kind of have to.
You see it
in the rules.
It's true. You see it right? In the album iconography, right? You see it in the design, but I've never read it in a bio where it says this was specifically funded. Yeah. And I thought that was maybe I viewed that not as a thing of pride from you, but as almost instructive to maybe younger artists. Like, there's this granting body that the reason I'm here, the reason you're hearing this record from me, younger people, is that there's this granting body that you can apply for money and they will help you. Like, was that maybe your motivation? Am I putting words in your mouth?
No, you're not putting words in my mouth. That's definitely, I mean, obviously I have to also say it on the back of the CD and things, but it was a way to be like, this is where I was able to do it. Like, this is how I was able to do it. And also in pride of like, I wrote a grant and I got the funding to do it. So I want you to know that this is work. I worked to write the grant to prove myself. Then I got the money and then we did this thing. And so here it all is. And these are all the parts that had to move in order for me to get here.
Yeah. No, it's cool. I like that I always appreciate your openness on social media and in instances like this where you want that information flow and these kinds of conversations to be a bit more transparent and visible. Mm-hmm. I think my read of that is that you view it as instructive to people who might learn from your examples and experience. And again, I don't mean to... Is that a burden that I've made you into this incredible person that... it's going to save everyone?
No.
Okay, no. I just want to make sure you're not...
Definitely not saving everybody, but I can be an incredible person, though.
You mentioned that, you know, you for 4 months, you were waiting, you had a good feeling you might get that grant. As a time-traveling witch, shouldn't you already have known the outcome of that grant application? How does your time-traveling witch stuff work? Like, could you have... okay, here's the thing, Leilani. I moved from Ontario to Alberta. And I've talked about this a lot with people. And when I moved, people were like, aren't you going to miss the restaurants in Toronto and Guelph? Aren't you going to miss, you know, going to the shows, the people that come to Toronto or Guelph? And I said, yeah, I guess. What are you going to do? I move. Almost instantaneously, all of that stuff gets shut down. No one can enjoy the stuff that I'm missing out on. No one can get together and socialize. Aren't you going to miss your friends? Yes, I'm going to miss seeing my friends. None of my friends can get together. Yeah. I started to think, am I a time-traveling witch? Is something going on with me? And so this mystical, magical stuff, like, did you foresee any of this 2020? Like, did you know? Did you have a feeling? You moved to a farm in Caledon, for crying out loud. You must have anticipated something was going to go haywire. Is any of this... Am I too on the nose here? Am I calling you out? I don't mean to.
No. You're not calling me out. You are kind of on the nose, though. But like, honestly, you are a witch in your own dimension, in your own universe. You're the star of your show, right? Like, you're the star of your Truman Show. You are the Truman. You are Truman. So.
Yeah, but did my Truman Show?
We are all our own Truman Show.
Has my Truman Show jeopardized the entire space-time continuum? That's what I'm asking you. Like, it seems odd. Someone just tweeted, "Hey, Vish, I listened to your appearance on the Landlord and Tenant Podmess, which is a podcast I was on My friends Mike Belazzo and James Hartnett, they run a podcast, comedy podcast, but they had me on for A Year in Review, which aired at the end of December of 2019. And at the end of it, I say, all right, guys, I'll see you in 2021 because I have a feeling 2020 is going to be a disaster. I am a time-traveling witch. So that's why I relate to you on that level. Like, this is a bizarre situation. Like, I feel like some of it was foretold. Do you have this? Yeah. Like, do you feel this at all? Like, do you feel like you knew something was up?
For sure.
Okay.
For sure. I was like, I really wanted to do a lot of traveling last year. And a lot of the traveling I didn't do, I was feeling very upset about it. And we kept talking about it, and everybody I talked to was like, it's okay, like, you'll get to travel, it's not a big deal. And I'm like, I don't know, like, I just want to do it now, like, I just want to get it over with.
Yeah.
But and I didn't, and now I'm home.
No, wait a minute, oh, you didn't do it?
So is everybody else, right. And I don't want to travel right now, actually. I'm like, no, I have asthma, I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to do that.
Yeah, it's scary, it is scary. Like, I'm trying to make jokes about it, but it is really frightening. And is the...
Yeah, for sure.
Is everything cool where you, in the region you're primarily living in, like, you're in Toronto as we're speaking, but is everything relatively cool?
No, Toronto sucks, man. Nobody likes to wear masks. There's a lot of... And yeah, it's just, it's weird. Like, in Caledon, when we're in Caledon, I'm just on the farm. I don't see anybody. Yeah. We literally go do grocery shopping and that's it. And I'll do a big run and it's like, I'm not going back to the store for a long time. Like, when I'm home, I'm home. So I don't see anybody. It's fine.
Caledon's okay then? Caledon's like, are people in Caledon? It tends to be, we have heard.
Yeah, everybody wears masks. But Toronto right now is having a really crazy spike. I think they almost hit 1,000 new cases a day.
Well,
yesterday or something.
Edmonton is the same. Where I'm calling from is this. It's not as high as per capita. It's very similar. Like, if we don't have as many people, obviously, as Ontario, as Toronto, but... It's bad. Like, it's particularly bad in my city. And I went out to the grocery store a day or two ago. And yeah, there's just always one or two people still won't wear a mask. There's no one enforcing it, which I find weird. Like, I don't... It's a bylaw here. You're supposed to wear the masks indoors and no one's... Anyway, it's just weird. I also... I don't know if you... Sorry, when did you move to Canada again? I can't recall. Did you tell me this last time?
To Canada? In 1980s. Or 87.
And how old are you again?
Four. Oh, wait, right. That would make sense. 82, 83, 84, 85. Huh. So it was 86.
You were young. And you were quite young. And you've been back to... It's Ethiopia, right?
Ethiopia, Eritrea, but I was born in Kenya. I've been back to Eritrea and Ethiopia, but that was when I was 15. So it's been over 20 years since I've been back.
One of the reasons I bring it up is, and I've had this conversation with a few people who are not from Western parts of the world. How do you, and I don't know if you've talked to people back home, but the way Western culture is dealing with this as this massive inconvenience, a thing that you can sort of, you can ignore the rules to better the situation. I've talked to a few people. And they say this does not occur in places like Africa, parts of Africa. Like, if there's a thing where they say malaria, what have you, mosquitoes, everyone just does whatever you're supposed to do. They recognize it as a thing that helps everyone and helps themselves. Are you surprised at the behavior of people who live in Canada and particularly, obviously, the United States, where they're just like, no, it doesn't apply to me, or I don't believe it, like... Do you know what I'm getting at there? Does this?
Yeah, no, I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised. It's because it's a very selfish culture that we live in over here.
Hmm.
Western culture is all about self and get as much as you can. Self, self, self. Whereas I believe African culture is about community, specifically to answer your question about African culture. So, like, African culture is about community. So I think that's why.
We're generalizing here. Every place has its problems, but it does feel... Yeah. I'm just viewing it as selfish, as entitled. And like, I'm also like... I'm like, fine to wait this out. Like, I'm surprised. I'm generally an impatient person. But I'm like, no, why can't we take a year off from all the normal stuff until this is contained? Do you feel that way?
Yeah. I liked quarantine, to be honest. I was okay with it. I was like, I'm okay with this. Oh, I don't have to go out right now. I'm cool with that.
It's good. That part's good. I mean, you are a working artist. I don't know how much touring you rely on or live performance you rely on.
Oh, yeah, I know. I'm trying not to think about it.
Right.
I lost a lot of money. I lost a lot of money because this was going to be the year. But at the same time, it was like, it's okay. It's okay.
Yeah.
I'm still alive. I'm not sick. I have a house over my head. I have food in my fridge. I have a loving family. And, I'm okay.
Okay.
So,
okay. That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. You have to kind of, that's all we can do, right? Is try to find these silver linings or else.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So you've been speaking about this record and how it relates to your family and how it might relate, how your family's history from your perspective might relate to issues regarding Black resilience and I think maybe Black resistance as well and to oppression. And now we're in this moment where Black Lives Matter has a very high profile. And I know you earlier said that these songs were written before this moment that we're all experiencing, but I wonder if you have any perspective on what these songs and your family history might say about these times. Is it possible for you to kind of relate the two now that this record is out?
Yeah, for sure. I feel like with this album in particular and with the movements that's happening, it's kind of the zeitgeist of the times, right? That like everybody is talking about equality, is talking about recognizing systemic racism and what we need to do to change that. And in a way, that's always what we're talking about. So I didn't write my songs and with that in mind, but because that's an issue that has always happened, that's always been something that we're dealing with in this world and within humanity. It's like, I guess it's kind of like ingrained in me that even when I'm not trying to write, specifically going out of my way to write something political, it always ends up being because I just am. My existence is political. So I cannot take away my Blackness. I cannot take away the struggle that comes with it. And so regardless how I share my art, it will in some way be connected to what's happening now because it's what I'm experiencing and what almost all Black people and people of color are experiencing throughout the world. So,
yeah. Have you spoken to, let's call them your elders, about what's happening in this collective moment now? I'm just curious because what I've been most fascinated by is I'm someone who has sort of, in school even, studied Black history in North America in particular. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I keep reading about are people just pointing out, like, people who experienced, like, the fight for civil rights in the 50s and 60s in the United States of America in particular, or, you know, people who have experienced police violence in Canada 30, 40, 50 years ago saying, yeah, here it is again. Like, this is kind of, it's a cycle. Like, this is very familiar to me.
Mm-hmm.
Have you had a chance to speak to people back home, so to speak, and get their perspective on what's happening now collectively?
No, unfortunately, the majority of my elders have passed. My grandmother does live in Kenya, but I don't, like, she's not on social media. I don't get a lot of chance to talk to her. You know, I had to sneak to get her on the, she's the one who's, I call her mama. She's the interlude is literally me sneak recording and, you know, just chatting with her and getting a little snippet of her. But we've never had political conversations in that context. With my mother, always. I mean, you know, she was growing up, you know, she was very political, very active. And, you know, she's the one who told me about refugee rights. She was an emergency and relief coordinator for refugees for many years in my lifetime. So it's it's something that's always been around, but it's not something that my family talks about.
Okay.
In terms of sitting and having a conversation, because, you know, as Africans, like as and as refugees, my parents have lived through a lot and lived through war, and it's a completely different experience. Black American experience and the experience of being a child of the diaspora in North America being a refugee from Africa and growing up there and dealing with the issues that are there. So it's definitely interesting. We have had conversations, but we try to not have too heavy conversations because we want to focus on the positivity and like my mom says, you know, that's what she does at work all day long. So when she's home, she wants to think about good things and nice things and surround herself with positivity and love and remind herself and the people that are around her that exists as well and that our existence does not rely on our trauma and we can focus on other things. So
yeah, that's absolutely fair. Sorry, what do you mind saying what your mom does for a living?
Oh, right now, I don't actually know what her actual title is. that was when I was growing up. So it's changed. She works for the Anglican Church House of Canada. Before she was an emergency and relief coordinator for refugees.
I see.
For many years, for maybe like 20 years, she was doing that. Now it's something else within that same organization. She's been working there for a long time. I just know, you know, like she travels the world and goes to a lot of different refugee camps and works with a lot of different women's organizations throughout the world, getting funding and fundraising for not-for-profit organizations and people making a change within the world. So yeah.
Okay, I appreciate that. Mm-hmm. Speaking of positive, as we're speaking, you have been shortlisted for the Polaris Music Prize, which is a big big deal here in Canada. It is an annual prize for the best album of the year. So I want to say, first, congratulations.
Thank you.
And secondly, how are you feeling about this thing? I know that's maybe a trite question because the response, I assume you're feeling pretty good, but...
Oh, yeah. Definitely excited.
As we're speaking... You know, it hasn't happened yet. Maybe people will be listening to this episode after it's happened. There's going to be a big gala, or it's going to be different, I guess. There's usually a big gala, but there's going to be some sort of virtual thing that happens for the Polaris Music Prize this year. It's normally a gathering of people. And so, on that note, how have you been asked to prepare for the event and for the award announcement on October 19th? Like, because normally people play live, and we gather together in a room. What do you have to do as an artist who is shortlisted for the 2020 Polaris Music Prize?
Well, what we got offered actually was really fantastic. And in lieu of not doing the gala, they offered each finalist, so 10 finalists, got offered to work with different videographers and filmmakers to create a short film based on their album. And so and with that came at $10,000. So you could either go with the people who have applied, and so they had an open call for people applying, different filmmakers applying, or you can work with a filmmaker that you already know, and which is what I ended up doing. I worked with a filmmaker I already know, and then I also wrote the film myself and produced it and was the casting director and so it was really exciting. So we shot a short film and it's going to be aired on the 19th. So instead of having a gala and the performances, they're going to be airing all the short films from the finalists, and then I think it's like everybody's just waiting on Zoom. And whoever is the winner gets invited into the room and everybody else does not. So
I see. Okay.
We'll see how it goes. It's exciting. I'm really excited to see everybody's film. So
that's great. I as you know, I mean, I'm a fan and I'm proud of you, if that makes any sense. I'm happy for you.
Thanks. this is a huge deal. Like, I really didn't think that, you know, like, not having, I don't have a PR agent. I literally just paid for one for this new video I'm dropping. Like, but otherwise, I've never had a PR agent. With the label is me and Sun. Like,
yeah.
You know, we've never really had any funding. This is the first time. And so to be able to have all this happen as like just the two of us moving this train along and to have recognition is a huge deal for us. And like, it's, I'm so grateful. And it's too bad that the gala isn't happening, because I would like to be in the room with everybody and,
yeah,
and I would love to perform. But I also am really excited about the film and the opportunity to also have something that I can take away after the Polaris Prize, regardless if I win or not, to be able to have this in my, you know, like as my assets folder of like, I've done a short film and here it is. And at the quality that it is really exciting.
No, it's, so that's great.
I'm thankful.
That's great. Yeah. So two sort of final questions. One, do you have a sense of what's next for you now that this record's out and you're accustomed, as we discussed, you're accustomed to working in sort of isolated conditions. So that's not necessarily going to hold you back the way it's held some of my other guests back. So you could conceivably start working on a new project if you haven't already. So I'm curious about that. And then also, if you want to let people know where they can learn more about Witch Prophet, I'd like to know that as well. So let's start with what's next. So what is sort of next for you?
So actually what's next is a couple different projects. So I have a soul album that I'm working on with Sun, where it's more like a soul Motown vibe. And then I also have, I'm just sort of in the talks, in the talking stage right now for a folk album. I've been talking about wanting to do a folk project for a really long time, and a friend of mine has hit me up and is like, we're gonna do this. So I'm really excited about that. And then of course working on everything that has to do with Heart Lake Records and putting out albums for Yasmin and a collaboration or a compilation album for Sun and a couple of other artists that I cannot say at the moment because we're still in contract talks. But it's just really just focusing on working on music and putting everything that we've learned in the process of like trying to push Witch Prophet into the spotlight and putting that all towards the Yasmin and Sun and the other artists that we have lined up for Heart Lake Records releases for 2021.
Nice. That's amazing. That's really great. So if people want to learn more about Heart Lake Records, DNA Activation, Witch Prophet, where would you like to send them?
Yeah, you can check everything out at heartlakerecords.com, or you can look me up at witchprophet.com, witch as in a cackling witch and prophet as in Jesus. Check that out.
you're a big fan of the Jesus, aren't you?
I am. Why not?
Yeah, why not? Right. He wasn't a witch, but
I don't know about that. I don't know.
Do you think Jesus was a witch?
Seemed pretty witchy to me.
Breaking news. You think Jesus was some kind of witch. Okay. All right. Seems like a weird note to end
water
on.
Water to wine. Come on. Walking on water. Healing people. Yeah. This is pretty witchy stuff. If he was a woman, they would have been like, burn him. But because he was a man, they're like, yay, I love you. So.
Well, as far as I know, that didn't exactly work
out. They did kill him. Sun just said, what the hell are you talking about? They killed him in the end. I was like, yeah, sorry.
They killed him in a pretty famously horrific way, as I recall. I mean,
I'm totally not laughing at this. This is very blasphemous. My grandfather would be rolling in his grave like, what are you doing? So, yeah.
Sorry, I'm just saying. You're laughing at me. You're not laughing at the predicament that Jesus found himself in.
I'm laughing at this joke, not about Jesus.
Okay. Yeah. Yes, fair enough. Okay. Now, if there's a song from DNA Activation that we can go out on, particularly for you to pick something that might, you know, wash away the sins of these last few moments, what would you select... And why?
Oh, I think I would probably have to go with Musa, because that is really the song of the now. It's questioning where we're going and trying to find the light at the end of this tunnel. And so I hope that people listen to it and feel the urgency in the need for change and transformation.
All right, well put. And Musa leads off this wonderful album, DNA Activation. Leilani, this is all—it's always fun. I love talking with you. I know we've only talked
Thanks.
A few times, but I really enjoy it. I love it, and I wish you the best luck with obviously this Polaris Music Prize, but everything going forward. Say hi to Sunsun for me, and I hope we talk soon.
Yes, we will.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Very, very special thanks to Ayo Leilani, a.k.a. Witch Prophet, for being on this, the 573rd episode of Creative Control, which is part of the Entertainment One podcast network, and it's available on all podcast platforms. Wherever you get your podcasts, Creative Control should be there. Apple, Google, Spotify, YouTube, whatever it is. So check it out on whatever podcast listening thing you use. or watching, I guess. If you can't find an episode of the show that you've heard about and you're looking for it, or if you want to learn more about me and sign up for my regularly scheduled newsletter, I've been saying semi-regular, but I'm a bit cocky because I finally put a new newsletter out just recently. So hopefully if you subscribe to the newsletter and you haven't seen it yet, go check it out. Anyway, if you want to figure out how to sign up for the newsletter, learn more about me, find old episodes, everything you need is at vishkana.com. You can like Creative Control on Facebook. Follow the show for updates and information on Twitter at vishcreative, or follow me directly at vishkana. Also, visit patreon.com/creativecontrol to make a flexible monthly donation to keep this podcast around. These donations really, really help, and they're the reason I'm here, frankly. $6 or more a month gets you access to more content, exclusive audio content that I don't put on the regular podcast, stuff from the past that I thought you might be interested in. But you don't have to. You can, you know, it's flexible. It's, you can do whatever you want. $6, you can pledge $1 or $3, $10, whatever you like. But $6 or more does get you more stuff. So go to patreon.com/creativecontrol and support the show there if you can. Thanks again to liveatmasseyhall.com, where you can watch beautifully captured concerts by great Canadian artists. Also, Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton for their in-kind support for this show. Also, Jim Guthrie lets me use some music of his on the show, and you can learn more about Jim at his website, jimguthrie.org. That'll point you to his Bandcamp and other stuff, and he's the best. Speaking of the best, you, thank you so much for listening to this episode with Witch Prophet. As I had mentioned at the top of the show, Witch Prophet was on this program in 2018. So find that episode. It was a live episode on the radio. It was fun. The Witch Prophet played some songs. We had chats between the songs, and that's where we met. It was good. So, otherwise, thanks for listening to this. I hope you subscribe and follow the show and tell your friends to do the same, and I will talk to you soon. Goodbye for now.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.